We know that health and safety are always top of mind for you. The same is true for the good people at UniMac. That's why they offer a tailored PPE gear cleaning solution that is easy to use. With certified training courses and their FireLink technology, following and tracking NFPA 1851 standards are a breeze. When it comes to a full solution for your crew, demand the total package. To learn more, visit unimac.com/firelink.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for tuning in to another episode of Scenes of Violence here on Fire Engineering Blog Talk Radio. A very special thanks to UniMac for sponsoring our show this evening. We have what I like to consider a special guest. Chief Billy Goldfeder is joining us this evening, and we're going to be talking about, as usual, scenes of violence and the things that you guys want to hear and discuss regarding on best procedures, practices, ways ahead. And I think in 2020, it's like going to a restaurant and ordering a meal and getting the wrong thing. Kind of want to give it back. So that being said, Chief, are you with us?
Sure am. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thanks for coming on. So recently you did a posting through the secret list where you talked about the eye chiefs putting out a letter. And I know that we had a little bit of discussion back and forth through email. What can you tell people about the eye chiefs, that letter, and we'll kind of kick things off from there.
So the focus of the eye chiefs was about our responsibility as firefighters and fire officers and fire chiefs, to make sure that we understand that there is a constant behavior expectation. In other words, and I took and I did some editorializing with it, but so let me go right to that first, Steve. And that is that you can't have a heart full of hate and also be a firefighter. Now, there's plenty that would argue, oh, yes, I can. And you know what? No, you can't. Because what we do is from the heart. Nobody's getting rich. I mean, few of us are here because this is just a job. Or those who came for it to be just a job, it turned into much more. But we've got to have people now who understand that we're there to take care of everybody. And so the ISC's focus was about behavior, about how we treat one another, how we treat the public, what's acceptable, what's not. And I took that a step further and questioned and challenged, because I've been a firefighter for a while. And I've seen some of these people who will tell you, I can't stand the Mexicans, or I can't stand blacks, or I can't stand whatever. But if there's a fire, I'll take care of them. Stop. I don't believe that. And I've seen that. We are humans. So what we have to do is, one, those who are amongst us, try to work with those folks and find out what the issues are and see if we can help. Maybe we can. I don't know. I'm certainly no psychiatrist. But more so, I think, Steve, what we need to do is make sure, as we're hiring, and that's as challenging as ever to hire the right people these days, to bring people on that actually give a damn. Who give a shit? I mean, that's what we're talking about.
Absolutely. I think the letter really spoke to society as a norm, but it also is kind of I look at it as a kind of a call to the fire service. We're supposed to be at a higher standard. We're supposed to be viewed differently under a greater microscope. So let's start with that. You want to start repairing things that are damaged. Start with what is already held to a high regard or a high expectation. If we can't fix that, we can't really point fingers towards anybody else. When we rightly can have fingers pointed at us. So, it's saddening, and it's really saddening to me to look back and see the protests, the unrest, that cascading effect of people, you know, hurting each other's communities, their businesses, and in some horrible circumstances, taking each other's lives. And where they say that's a new dynamic for the fire service, it's not necessarily all that new. I mean, it was something people dealt with in the 60s and 70s, far worse than what it is now. But here we are. So what do we do as a service in the preparation? How do we even begin to unpack? How are we going to go about responding to this kind of stuff from your perspective?
So I'm in so many projects I'm involved with, it always comes right back down to the company officer. Years ago, I had the pleasure to spend some time with Dr. O'Neill, Dennis O'Neill, the former Deputy U.S. Fire Administrator. We've been friends since the 70s. But this was in his official capacity, and he was soliciting input on how or what he could do to change or move the National Fire Academy to the next level and things like that. And he said, what would you do if you were in charge? And I said, I'd get rid of every class you have. I keep BFO for chiefs, and I turn it more into a chiefing program. And then I'd create this super course that's for company officers and those who want to be. Because pretty much whatever course you take at the Fire Academy is based upon the responsibilities of a company officer, right? That's kind of what we're talking about. Because I have not yet found a problem, or I'd say it's rare that there's a problem that a company officer, when they're properly trained, cannot solve, minimize, fix, repair, deflect, slow down, whatever words you want to use. It all happens at that level. So I think that's sort of where we go for our solution to train again, what you were saying, Steve, to make sure we're going to bring the right people up as company officers. But let's just, for the sake of this discussion, let's assume that we've got who we're looking for to be our company officers. So they're trained. So they then are trained in responding to and dealing with behaviors that set alarms off in their heads. If she's going to act like that in the firehouse, then can I expect her to act that way on the scene? If he's going to behave this way in quarters, I'm concerned he's going to act that way on the scene. And so part of that promotional process for company officers is making sure we have company officers that have the fortitude to be able to take on a challenge, to confront people. That's a big deal. We have a lot of leaders in this business, and I'm talking about some of the biggest organizations to our local firehouses, where these, quote, leaders are afraid to confront people, don't want to have that conversation, don't want to lock horns, don't want to be threatened with a lawsuit, don't want to be accused of harassing. Well, if we train them right, and there's always going to be that risk of any of the above, they should have those skills to approach and solve the problem. So to wrap back around, Steve, what I'm saying is, if we train good company officers, that's how we start to deal with this problem. That's the person who does the daily training, person who reviews, educates, trains on, and enforces the policies and procedures. I mean, that's kind of where the rubber meets the road. So if we got a raving lunatic working in a firehouse, hopefully we've trained and educated that company officer on how to deal with the problem. Now, kind of think about size up, right? You've got a problem employee. Let's say it's one of those people you were talking about, that it's a societal issue and it's our issue. We got someone who's just running off the mouth with some of the foulest languages, some of the most derogatory terms and the most offensive terms. that officer should have in their repertoire the ability to start fixing that problem. Now, if it's a behavioral issue problem, right, mental issue, behavioral health, things like that, we want the company officer to kind of think of themselves as the first responder on a hazmat team. You're the first arriving engine company for a hazmat run, but you're not a hazmat tech, so you're going to minimize the situation until the hazmat team gets there. It's the same thing with an HR, with a behavioral health problem in the firehouse. You're trained to minimize it, slow it down, and then bring in the big guns. So let's just say that's the someone who's really gone off in the firehouse. On the other hand, let's just say it's a firefighter who's just using some foul language. Well, we should be able to deal with that. You know, hey Sally, what was that? What did I just hear? Oh, I'm just kidding. All right, come on in. Let's sit down for a minute. Let me tell you why we can't kid like that. That's what we need in our firehouses. And look, you and I could spend all night talking about many other issues in our firehouses, but it comes down to a well-qualified, well-trained fire officer that gives a damn, who knows on how to slow a problem down, how to fix a problem, or how to take care of it and bring it to whatever level it needs to be brought to. So that's kind of my thought, Steve, is when you say, how do we doing this, how do we – it comes down to our company officers. Now, let me just give you another example, because this is my absolute favorite subject. A company officer is going to spend about 90% of their time dealing with people stuff and 10% of their time on fire stuff, right, rescue stuff, things like that. We require you to be a certified EMT. We require you to have certified firefighter certifications, hopefully. We require you to hopefully have some command level training, but what are we doing to train that officer to protect our organization and to make sure our firefighters are being treated fairly when we have that internal issue to deal with? So we're quick to train on how to stretch a line. We're quick to teach how to operate as a RIT team, how to rappel down a building, but we seem to shy away on the personnel stuff. Now, some people tell you, well, it's just not sexy, it's not exciting. But it's actually pretty sexy. It's pretty cool stuff if you shut up for a minute and pay attention and learn about it. And it's also, though, another way of saving somebody, whether it's somebody somebody just running at the mouth, they're using some poor language that it needs to be fixed immediately, or it's somebody having a significant behavioral health issue. There's a lot of ways of saving people in our business. So, I don't know, does that help?
Yeah, I literally love the analogy of the first new company with not a lot of hazmat background at a hazmat. We're going to slow this down, and then we're going to bring in the specialists, the people who we expect to be highly skilled at this, and that's hopefully your chief officers, and they followed along that ideology of training and education to get to that specialist level. I think that's a great analogy. And I'm telling you, I'm going to steal it, just so you know. I mean,
absolutely.
I think it's great. And you know, a good example of this, and I think it's an example of firefighters acting as if we're a family and feeling safe to express some things, but understanding that there are some lines. My fire chief, sadly, his brother passed from COVID. And he was 60, healthy, didn't have any medical conditions or problems that would exasperate this. And it's really a sad and unfortunate situation. And they don't really understand how it got to the point that it did. But it did. Now we've had some personnel who got COVID, and they got the sniffles and a little bit of uncomfortableness for a couple of days, and they were fine. The political landscape has been masks, no masks, and there's been a lot of personal expression as to the virus as itself and things like that. And my fire chief basically said, that may be your experience with the coronavirus, but it's not everybody's experience. And as you're expressing yourself and saying, you know, this is ridiculous, you know, this is, the masks don't do nothing and the coronavirus ain't a big deal, other people are dying and other people are burying their loved ones. Be careful what you say. Be careful of your audience. Be careful of things like that and letting stuff get off the rails, because you don't know who you're damaging. You don't know who you're affecting. You put the uniform on. My responsibility at that point is to act and behave in the expectations that I know come from my agency. We talked last show with Sheriff Lott, my sheriff here in Columbia. And one of the things we talked about, sports players that refuse to stand for the national anthem or want to kneel. If that's your personal opinion, that's your freedom. But when you put that uniform on, you represent this agency. And if the agency is not comfortable with that, then you have to respect that or find a different uniform to wear. And I think that's a sound message that the fire service also needs to hear.
So I've used the term for years. It's called a behavioral rental agreement. And when we bring somebody on board and when they're hired and all that sort of stuff, we explain to them exactly what their expectations are. But sometimes when someone goes off the beaten path or goes outside our expectations, our policies and procedures, we have to remind them that we're renting your behavior. For 24 hours, we have a certain level of expectation. And if I'm telling you that you're going to wear an SCBA at a car fire, then you're going to wear an SCBA at a car fire. And we're not debating it. We're not discussing it. I don't care whether you think it's a good idea or not. It doesn't matter. And I see the COVID situation the same way. If our job is to try and protect the public and each other, then do it. I mean, or stop yelling brotherhood and all that bullshit. I mean, and sisterhood or whatever. You can't turn it on and off based upon your convenience or political views or whatever. And I don't know that health is a political issue, quite frankly. I mean, we've seen some crazy stuff on both sides in the last couple of years. But it's that simple. I mean, we don't want to spread infection. We don't want people to get sick. And if your crew is responding to I remember back in the 90s and 80s when we were dealing with AIDS, and just the mere mention of the word, people would put, you know, body suits on and SCBAs and gloves and all that. And, you know, of course, we calmed down and realized you just need to put on a mask and take care of the patient as you would your own loved one. And that's what I'm saying on this end is that if we're going to talk about the COVID issue, we didn't ask for your opinion. We didn't vote on this. This is not something that, because, again, I'm renting your behavior for a certain period of time. We're going to pay you a really good salary, probably better money than what you made before you were a firefighter. We're going to let you work 24 on, 72 off, or 24 on, 48 off. We're going to have benefits that are as good as anybody's, if not better. So, you know what? We expect a certain type of behavior. And if that's not going to work out for you, then maybe this is not the right place for you. I mean, so we spend so much time debating some of this back and forth. But there's absolutely nothing wrong for someone to explain to their employee that, hey, we pay you for you to have a heartbeat and a pulse at work, but a certain type of behavior. And that has to also tie into what we talked about, too, is how we treat people, how we talk to people, our language. I'm not paying you on shift here to diss a certain orientation in our community, to diss a certain type of religious group, to diss a certain people of color. It's not going to happen because we're paying for a certain expectation. Now, the volunteer side, well, we're not paying them. Doesn't matter. Whatever it is you receive as your reward as a volunteer, whether it's self-satisfaction or whatever it is, that's the pay. And again, there's certain expectations.
Absolutely. I think that's probably one of the most important documents that you should have in your repertoire of policies and procedures is a code of conduct policy. And I think it's not enough due to our profession and our closeness with one another to simply adopt your city, county, towns, similar ordinance if they have one for employees. Sit down, write your own. Make sure that you read theirs from cover to cover and say, we're going to expand on that, and here's some other things we want. You've said it before. If you permit it, you promote it. If I don't have a document of expectations that I can point you to so that you're clearly understood of what's what, anything after that, I'm leaving it up to that individual company officer's opinion as to whether or not this reaches a nexus of inappropriateness or that needs to be engaged. And I think that's a big screwdriver in your toolbox that you really ought to have. But having said that, you had mentioned the well-trained company officer. I don't think that the dichotomy both in society and within our own services between law enforcement and fire should just be left dispelled to myth and stereotypes and such. I think it's worthy if we're asking firefighters to respond to shootings and stabbings and domestics and things like that, to work it out through their law enforcement agency to go do a ride along with the police agency for a few hours, half a shift, something like that, however you work the time trade out, and let them sit in the front seat of a patrol car for a little bit, and help gain some of the knowledge of how that agency operates, how the common forms of speech, radio transmissions, things like that. And not only do you get that training, but I think you also get to form that relationship with that officer, and they're no longer Officer Johnson, they're Sally or Jim, because you've had that relationship. And I've found in my experience that relationship can be very critical on the crappiest of scenes when you can look across and see your brother or sister law enforcement officer and know them on a first name basis. What are your thoughts on that kind of approach?
That's a home run. I mean, it's like when you work with a mutual aid department, if you're not meeting with them ahead of time and having lunch and doing training and stuff, you're wasting your time. The police is the same thing. And that's a great idea, is to do that and have them ride along if they want and kind of establish that relationship. The key is that you don't want to ever get to an emergency and meet these people the first time. You know, something also came to mind when you were talking about that, Steve. I thought about Mike Wilbur, who's retired now, lieutenant from the Bronx in New York City. Mike's a very close friend of mine. And in New York City, there are community boards. Each community has a board, and it's sort of a semi-form of local government that works its way up to city council and all that. But those boards are sort of the representatives of the community. And each of the company captains And each of the captains and lieutenants of those fire comps throughout New York from time to time attend those meetings and get to know the community. So, I mean, really, you want to talk about trying to minimize problems. Your suggestion about that relationship being built with law enforcement is 100%. Invite them in the fire. I mean, when I was growing up in Long Island and my early years in the fire service, that's where you found the police cars behind the firehouses. They were in the firehouse all the time hanging out with us. So that was a big bonus for now. They're supposed to be out on patrol, but that's a whole other subject. But we were able to establish those relationships like you just talked about. But the other part is you got to get out of the firehouse and get into the community. So here's let's tie back to sort of what we talked about with relationships in the community. So you can't stand the kind of people that you're serving in your community, then you get a problem, because now you got to go to community board meetings, You got to go to community events. And you can't hide the hatred. So that's, again, what we talked about, whether we can change behaviors or we can make sure we're hiring the right people. But when it comes to your focus of your show and your area of expertise, and that's violence, the best thing we can do is minimize that. And probably, without me sounding too Pollyanna-ish, the best thing we can do to minimize those problems is to avoid those problems by building relationships.
And that's been a major theme since I started this radio show, has been if your senior leadership, if your brass between agencies can't seem to come together for whatever the reason, and I'm sure that there are many, I kick it down to the individual firehouses and the companies. What's stopping you from picking the phone up and calling the PD and saying, "Hey, we're having burgers for lunch. You want to come over?" That just that sheer gesture, because law enforcement, we're all not that too different, you know, between personality. You feed a firefighter, you have a friend for life. If you feed a cop, you got a friend for life. As long as the food's good, you just made a buddy. I think it's important to just to offer that gesture. And we share that background. My family's from the North Fork on Long Island, and I volunteered in upstate New York. And my volunteer fire chief was also a town patrol officer. And our station was open to any law enforcement officer. All the guys on patrol, they knew the door code. At 2 o'clock in the morning when it was quiet and there was nobody out on the streets because it was a smaller town, they would come in there and they would fix themselves a cup of coffee. And it was not unusual. It was actually expected. And in some instances, if you didn't see them, you'd be calling on the local radio channel, checking on them to make sure that they were okay, because something's wrong if you haven't come by the fire station. And that's what I grew up in. Well, my father was a police officer for 36 years in New York, and I grew up in that relationship. So maybe it comes naturally to me, and the fact that I'm a sheriff's deputy and a fire captain, that's an easy transition for me. But I think if you're not creating that relationship, that handshake and a smile will take you lightning years ahead of what any policy or meeting or procedure or ordinance could ever possibly do. If you could just do that handshake and a smile, you're going to get places.
Good. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
But no, please go ahead.
But this is, again, this is, so you, it's a volunteer fire department. You can do it on drill night. You can do it on Sunday drills, whenever you do it. If it's a career fire department, and this is really where I was going with this, you got to get off your ass and do something. You can't just sit around a firehouse all day. You can't keep the doors closed. You got to get, if it's a police situation, you want to get involved with the cops, then just do it. Invite them in for a meal. Invite them in for a drill. Explain to them, hey, we're doing some hose drills. Why don't you guys, the on-duty crews, come by and meet us? We'll show you why you don't want to block the hydrant, or you don't want to block us in and have some fun with that kind of thing. But I keep circling back to the company officer. Lead your crew, go out, invite the cop, go out to a meeting, whatever it is, but go do something instead of doing nothing. And like you just described, in your community, things get quiet at night. Some cities, that's the way it is. Some cities, it gets busy at night. But the firehouse should always be open to them to come hang out. Now, the other side is their bosses will be complaining they're hanging around the firehouse and not on patrol. So find a balance. And certainly there's always a way to balance something like that out.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's what it is. And it saddens me to see the law enforcement profession under this dark cloud that it is. It has found itself under in the last several years, because most of the cops that I know, good, honorable people. As a matter of fact, that I can't think of an officer that I know personally or I've worked with that isn't a very honorable individual. It's not prejudicial. It's not looking to jam anybody or hurt anybody unnecessarily. And I think we have an opportunity to help lift them up as they're trying to go through this. And one day maybe the cards will flip and they'll be there for us because we need them to be. So
it's definitely a tough time. I mean, it's a tough time for law enforcement. And, you know, we'll see what the coming months and years bring as far as turning some of that around. But this ties into the old adage, you know, one bad apple don't spoil a whole bunch. Well, unfortunately, in America, and I'm extremely patriotic, I have been since I can remember, but unfortunately, America right now, it's the other way around. One bad apple does spoil the whole bunch. And we as a society instantly jump on the negative. And oh my God, this is, you know, that's like the reaction, and it's tied into social media and just societal behavior and all. And we can't change that. There's nothing we can do about that. That's society, you know, people smarter than me will figure that kind of shit out. But what we can do is, again, focus on our little corner of the world. You know, when I talk to a lieutenant and they want to change the fire department, I said, let's just focus on your little company here, on your 24 hours. And if I could get all my lieutenants and captains to focus on their little companies and their 24 hours, then we can get things fixed in the fire department. It's when you're so worried about somebody else or some other station or other crew and not focusing on yourself that's when we get ourselves in trouble. So, again, back to the relationship issue, supporting the police, you want to show, you know, you're frustrated, you're an engine company lieutenant, and you're frustrated with what's going on with the police. Well, the next time you're having a safety day or something, put the fire trucks next to the police cars. Show that solidarity together. You know, I don't know. I mean, because it's as different as a community. I mean, you got some communities. I mean, you can go by our station 63, and there's a large blue line painted right across the front bays, and our community loves that. And we did that to make right across the glass doors. It's like a 12-inch blue line that goes right across the front. But there's other places in the United States where whoever put that blue line up there would probably lose their job. So it has to be, you know, we're so different. You can go from Miami to Detroit to Portland, Maine to Portland, Oregon, and see a whole lot of different cultures. And that's great. That's not bad or anything like that. But we have to understand the culture of the people we're serving. And that, again, here's the company officer who represents the crew, the fire department, et cetera, in trying to make those inroads with the communities. And I don't know how you would do it, but maybe there is a way to show in areas where the public's having a big problem with the cops and it's not justified because there's no local issues. They're only looking at issues of other communities. Maybe we can help them with that situation. I don't know. That's a pretty big deal. You know, I mean, I don't know where we go with that, but it is a challenge these days, especially for the police.
Yeah, we locally here in Columbia, we're the capital of South Carolina, there's been civil unrest and the crime rate has increased exponentially. Anytime you look at the news now, there's a reporting of multiple robberies and shootings and stabbings and deaths and things like that. Before you get to the person celebrating the elderly lady who has 101st birthday today or whatever. The feel good news. And it's a reality that we have to face. And during the civil unrest that occurred here, cars on fire and the Columbia Fire Department showed up on engine one, got off and tried to deal with the fire. And they started getting bricks and rocks and stuff thrown at them. And one of the guys got hit in the head. A couple of people on a crew got injured and needed to go to the hospital. And, you know, if you wear that navy blue uniform, it doesn't matter what your badge says, in a certain environment, depending on, as you said, you know, the culture of your community, testing that temperature. We're in this together. So as much as they are targets for this aggression, know that when you show up, you good chance you're going to be that target too. And that's a reality. And again, it's sad and unfortunate, but that's where we are. And I think
and then,
because
and then at that point, a decision has to be made. I mean, you know, if we pull up to a fire and people are throwing bricks at us, there's a good chance we're leaving. You know, I'm not going to put my people in a position to do that. But so if and I have no expertise in policing, but if the local police or law enforcement folks and the local fire folks well ahead of time have taken time to develop those relations in the community, maybe there's a better chance that we're not going to have that happen. Maybe they're going to protest a little more peacefully because they see Steve, the fire captain or whoever. I don't know. I mean, dude, if I had the answers, I'd be really wealthy because that's the answer everybody's trying to figure out today. How do we get everybody to calm down and refocus on our country as a whole, right?
Exactly. I think the your experience as technical committee member of NFPA standards, I got lucky enough to be placed on the NFPA 3000, the active shooter hostile event response program technical committee, and covers not just fire and EMS. I mean, it's 20 chapters. It's a bear. But it also covers community involvement in the preparation response or preparation to the response. The motto of the or one of the slogans for the standard is prepare, respond, recover. And there are competencies and sections within that covers law enforcement. There are sections in there that covers the community and business owners, property owners, city government, and other various entities, and of course the incident itself, and then recovery. I know from hearing frustrations in the implementation of that standard is the difficulty in getting each of the stakeholders in those three areas to the table in order to develop a comprehensive plan. And circling to the company officer, and I think it's great. At that level, I'm at a loss for how to pull that community together to plan for that type of event. And I've started to try to tackle it a different way and look at it as an all hazards approach to a natural disaster or some other type of non-man-made, non-violent intended event, because the structure is similar. What are your thoughts on trying to take something like an NFPA standard that is new and fresh, that people might have some pushback or resistance to? What do you do with that as a boss, as a company officer, a chief, or an administrator?
So when we're talking about a standard, we're talking about a department-wide adoption and department-wide use. So that really does fall into the top leadership of the organization in the official capacity. You know, we're officially going to adopt the standard, we're going to train on it, et cetera. But reverting back to the company officer thing, there's nothing stopping the company officer today from going out and starting to work on what they're going to do in the event if something occurs in their first due area. So when you say, Steve, that you're tying it into a natural disaster response, the good part, if there is one, about a natural disaster is it does not look at a certain type of person. We all suffer through that. So when a tornado, a hurricane, an earthquake comes through a community, everyone is equally targeted. Okay, so stick with that thought for a second. When we're talking about civil unrest in the community, we're talking about a completely different kind of animal and a whole different emotion, because in the eyes of those who feel that they are being treated wrongly, they tornado only hitting them and not everybody else. So that's just kind of what came to mind when you brought that up to me. I don't have any, I'm not on the committee, obviously. I don't have any expertise or anything in that area. But I do try to, I try to see things, and not always successfully, I do try to see things in the eyes of people that are experiencing them. So, yes, if you're going to go to, you know, Pleasantville, and you're going to explain to everybody in Pleasantville, in the event of a tornado, here's what we're going to do. Everybody's going to be treated equally by that tornado. It's going to kick your ass. It's going to rip the roof off your house. It doesn't care if you're black, white, Asian, gay, or whatever you are. However, when it comes to the civil unrest issues that we're seeing today, it's a different, there's a different twist to that, although there may be able to be a similar response, but it's a different twist because depending upon who you are, you're going to see that tornado is hitting you a whole lot different. If you're African American and you're in a community where you're of the opinion that the cops aren't treating you right, the tornado is the cops and it's coming after you because you're black and not because or not someone else because they look different than you. And that may be a harsh view, but I don't know. I'm trying to understand that. And so how do we fix that? And that's what we circle back to what we said before about relationships. And you as the captain of Engine 12 can go out in the community, can get involved and get to know the religious leaders, the social leaders, the community leaders. I mean, if you got gangbangers, you probably want to limit your relationships with them. I mean, there's only so much we can do, right? But if we're talking about, you know, a working class community where people are similar things, it shouldn't be that difficult to get out there. So let's say you do have a situation to respond to and you see Mr. Jones, who's the grocery owner, who's also the part-time minister at the scene of the shooting. That may give you a little edge on it. I don't know, but it might.
Yeah, I agree. And I think a protest is one thing. A riot is something completely different. And now the protest, as you articulated, you know, there may be that tornado that caused that. Once it goes into a riot, it has become its own tornado, and it is no longer, it doesn't discriminate. They smash windows and buildings and set, you know, CVS's on fire in Baltimore. I don't know if the CVS was responsible for the egregious behavior of the law enforcement in the eyes of the community.
They catch the shrapnel. They're the exposure to the fire, so to speak. Yes.
So that, I guess that is my direction is for fire personnel and EMS personnel to look at that as it's taken a life of its own, and it performs as such. And you can have thoughts and feelings about what brought it about from the get go. But now it's taken on a life of its own, and it's something completely different. I think the Capitol riots on the 6th is a good example of that. I think if you took those 50,000 people, and you separated them, and they may have grievances, they may have things they're upset about, but I don't believe that all 50,000 of those people would have thought that it was a good idea to do a one man band show and march up into Congress and let everybody know how they feel. I think when it got to that point, it just kind of takes on its own identity. And that could be destruction.
It takes on a life of its own. Yeah. People are dragged into stuff. I mean, I think at one time or another, we've all been in a situation where, you know, maybe we're in a firehouse or maybe we're the younger kids and they're picking on this one or they're messing with that one. And we sort of kind of get this gang on mentality, and afterwards like, what the hell was I even thinking? Right. So that does happen. I agree with you.
Yeah. How did I get here? You know,
yeah.
that moment where your span of awareness actually expands just a little bit from that task level orientation to be like, how did I get here? And what the hell am I, what's going on?
Sure.
Yeah. I think moving forward, as you've said throughout this, we need to get back to relationship building. And if you take a hard internal look at your organization and the internal relationship dynamics, if there's a problem there, you need to focus on some of that. And then expanding that outward, what is your relationship outside of your agency with your police officer, your EMS folks, your transport agencies, the hospital, and then the community as a whole? And relationships fix everything. A handshake and a smile will go all kinds of ways. And if it's genuine, and if it's brought with you can change the world. But maybe the world doesn't need to be your focus. What needs to be your focus is what's immediately around you, and then expanding out from your agency.
Bingo, exactly. And that's the whole focus is you can't change the world. So let's focus on your piece and see how that works out. And if not, you've done the best you can, and that's the world you live in with your own. And if so, then if you can make a better difference by pushing that on further. But we've got to all focus. My boss at LSFD uses a term all the time, stay in your lane. Stay in your lane. Focus on what you're supposed to do. What is your responsibility? It's easy to focus on other people's stuff when you can comment on it and then walk away from it. It's easy to criticize, and this is all basic, you know, kindergarten stuff, right? You know, but if you're responsible for apparatus, then make sure the apparatus is the best. Make sure the apparatus is ready. Make sure the pump's been checked. Make sure you got water in the booster tank. You're the driver for the shift. Don't worry, Cations is doing today. Focus on Engine 11. If you're the officer of Engine 11, is your radio working? Is your tool in the right spot? Is the map book ready? Whatever it is, whatever you do. Like, I haven't done a truck check since 1982. I haven't run on apparatus since 1982. But I'll tell you right now, you walk out my garage and you have as good or as better an equipped chief's car that's checked every day. Everything is where it belongs. My stuff's being charged. My pens are ready to write. My pencils are ready to write. My radios work, my backup. In other words, that's my lane. I don't go to station 60 or 61 or 62 to see, if they checked the trucks today. I can't do that. Now, will we trust and verify from time to time? Absolutely. And don't be offended if I stop at your firehouse and want to check something. It should be an opportunity for you to go, see, son of a bitch, I had it right. You didn't even have to check on me. But that's okay. That's also part of the relationship building, but staying focused in our area of responsibility. So tying it back to what we first started talking about, you're a lieutenant at Station 19 in Happyville, then make sure that crew is familiar with the community, that they know who the leaders are, they know the cops on the beat, and all the things we talked about today, and there's a good shot that you've upped your insurance to have a pretty good place to work and a pretty good shot at surviving better. So especially, you know, obviously in the civil unrest area, which is your area of expertise, you have a better shot if it's people who know you. You have a better shot if the cops know who you are, and on and on and on. Again, relationships.
Absolutely. Asking that officer, when that officer comes and says, hey, we need to really open up this road, the approach can be, hey, Jim, can we get the road open? Yeah, Beth, no problem. Can you give me 5 minutes? Yeah, sure, no problem. That's a very different conversation than, this is the highway. We are responsible for this, and I'm telling you, you're going to open this road up. Yeah, that's not how that's going to work there, bud. We're protecting our personnel, and we're going to keep the road closed until we damn well feel good enough to open it. I don't know, can I back an engine up and give them a lane? I don't know, where are we at with the process? Oh, patient's been extricated and, you know, we're doing tool pickup. Okay, everybody, we're going to open up a lane. Is everybody good with that? Can we do that safely? Yeah, hey, no problem. Just give me 2 minutes and I'll open a lane up for you. That's a different conversation when you have that relationship. And because you have it, you feel safe to communicate.
And because of that, I mean, in the last 10 years, we've seen almost an about face on that. We almost never hear that happening anymore. Maybe some rookie cop or something who wasn't properly trained. But for the most part, I mean, and it's part of the education through the people like Responder Safety and others to help the cops understand, you know, they're getting struck three times as many times as we are. And we want to protect them as well. So using that as your example, that's a great example. It's come down to using programs that force relationships in the local community. The police department goes to the same class we do. We all take the Responder Safety program. And now it's not about opening the road up. And even the bosses high above who've dealt with cops who've been run over, those are the same cops or the bosses of the cops who used to call and say, why isn't that road open up? Now it's, let's make sure we're covering our personnel out there. It's really turned around. So that's a great example you brought up, Steve. And that's a great example of showing how by working together, we really have seen an improvement. Because I don't know about you, but I've not heard or seen anything in headlines in the last couple of years, honestly, like we were seeing probably 8 or 9, 10 years ago.
Yeah, it's been a minute. And I think, you know, as you said, with the Responder Safety, in some instances, you may have been put in a room sitting next to a cop taking that class, or it might have been something online. And you start to understand on the flip from the law enforcement perspective, every minute you keep this road shut, you're backing traffic up 15 minutes on an interstate. And what you may not understand is that now there are 5 fender benders, and I'm spending the next 5 hours as a law enforcement officer documenting and going and trying to deal with all those fender bender wrecks that occurred because of bunching up that traffic. And I think there was a thought at a time, well, I don't care, that's your problem. Yeah, it is their problem. But when you take 3 law enforcement officers off the street and now you're sitting and staging someplace waiting on a cop to get there because, you know, there's a domestic assault or something like that, you're like, what's taking them so long? Yeah, they're out on the interstate working the wrecks from when we shut the interstate down. They can't just take off. They got to close that out. So I think there's been that ability to understand on both sides what the cause and effect of decisions that we make within the auspice of our authority and how it affects each other in our day-to-day or our day-to-day working tasks and relationships. And I credit it to the forced relationship through joint training that is mandated at various different levels to make that happen.
Yeah, no, it's a great example of opening up the bay doors and open up the police car doors and understand what each one's going through. And while we're quick to, you know, throw a tower ladder across an interstate to shut everything down, maybe we only have to shut down 2 lanes instead of all 6 lanes or whatever, by shutting up and listening a little bit to take a better understanding to see what other people are going through. Makes sense.
Yep. Well, I think we're coming up right on the hour, and all the other radio show hosts have told me, you know, keep it in an hour. You don't want to go over an hour. We're gonna lose people. But that being said, I wanted to give you the opportunity to throw out a last thought. And now that COVID is starting to, I feel that we're starting to get a handle on things. You know, if you got any projects or speaking engagements or stuff that you're working on, that you'd like the people listening to know about, please, tell us something real quick before we click off of here.
So the only thing I'm going to say is that, we've seen in the last couple of days the number of firefighters burned. And somebody said to me, and I'm not going to talk about the incidents, but someone said to me that, how come they don't know about this fire? How come they don't know about that fire? And that's because we're not getting information passed down like we should. So what I want to throw out to your audience is, if you haven't done it already, check out the 3 books, Pass It On, 1, 2, and 3. First of all, 100% of all the proceeds have been donated and will be donated to National Fallen Firefighters, the Chief Ray Downey Scholarship, and the Firefighter Cancer Support Network. But there's nothing like learning from someone who's been there and done that. And those series of books give you that opportunity. So again, there's no money being made on my end. But I just beg you to take a chance and purchase one or all three of the books. I promise you, you will not be disappointed. And everything from people who've gone through your area of expertise, Steve, and that is violence for firefighters and dealing with domestic terrorism type stuff, but also dealing with people who don't maybe look like you. You'll hear from people that you never have a chance to hear from otherwise. So you gave me a chance to push something. That's what I'm going to push. I urge them to check it out. It's on Amazon, or you can go to Fire Engineering Books and get some very good pricing there on any of the three Pass It On books. That's it. And thank you for having me.
Well, and no, I greatly appreciate you taking your time out of your life to come on and give us some nuggets. I think we had a great discussion. I felt there were some aha moments and some ways that things are articulated in a different way to maybe see some lights and stuff. And I hope those that listen live and those that tune in later will feel the same. And I greatly appreciate your expertise and your willingness. And I look forward to seeing you in Indy in August, hopefully, if we're able to get that thing kicked off. And for those that don't know, FDIC has been postponed from its normal March-April timeframe to August. And I hope that we have a handle on things and when we can come together as a profession and share some knowledge and try to better each other. Again, Chief, thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate it. And stay safe.
Thanks for what you're doing in taking this sort of this dark corner of our profession that really nobody's been exposed to, and you're helping us all get better educated. So it sure is appreciated.
Well, thank you, Chief. God bless everyone. Thank you very much. And tune in about 4 to 6 weeks, and we will do Responding to Scenes of Violence again. Everybody stay safe. Have a good night. Still with me, Chief?